The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday, Tuesday, casual Tuesday, Wednesday, casual hump day, Thursday, casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, July 5th, 2019. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live to tape steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. So casual that we're actually recording this on Wednesday night. I'm not going to tell you a lie. Yesterday was July 4th. Today is July 5th, but not really. I'm just anticipating this being July 5th, recording this on July 3rd. Unless something horribly goes wrong, Friday will be July 5th. But in the event that we have gone through some time of strange time-space continuum, I want to offer my apologies that today is not July 5th or Friday, or I'm not sure all the things that could go wrong, but whatever they are, they are. Today, special edition of the show, because we're all on abbreviated vacation. I'm actually probably right now, I'm probably right over there as you're listening to this or watching this, and I'm cleaning stuff up over there, trying to fix that thing. So, and then I'm going to try and fix that thing. So, but nevertheless, we are, I am very pleased to have in studio, live to tape, Alex Perrine, staff writer from really the new Republic.
Yeah. The new. I would add a second new, or maybe a third new at this point, actually.
The newest.
The newest new, Republic, yeah.
The new Republic is here with me. Michael will join us in a bit. He is, he's taking, I think he's getting a massage or something like that now. What is he doing? He's some type of aromatherapy
program. Acupuncture.
Not exactly sure what it is, but and so we're going to look back on the week, the abbreviated week, but I think we should also look forward to look back. Mm-hmm. In other words, let's talk about what happened tomorrow.
Yes, let's. Yeah,
which is the July 4th celebration. With the tanks.
The tanks.
And the missiles? Are we going to see missiles?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I will know. By the time you hear this, I will know if we have seen missiles or not.
And I'm just going to check the weather, too, to see what the weather would be like. Today we did a show, and I was hoping that tomorrow we would have such intense rain in Washington, D.C. in the morning that... I am not seeing any rain until maybe later in the day, and then only 30%.
I did see word that the Blue Angels have decided that they won't be showing up tomorrow. So based on the weather reports,
really?
Wow! So much for our air superiority as a military.
It's a little bit scary in some ways. I mean, it's just symbolic.
Yeah. It's this weird Trump era thing of like scary silly, right? Like it's just everything has this bizarre combination of deeply silly and then like unsettling.
And with a lot of this stuff, it's almost one of those things like can't really tell if it's going to be a problem for like 5 years. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, like yeah. Okay, Trump is going to do this again next year because he's been able to do it this year.
Yeah.
And presumably it's going to get bigger. He's going to say, we had 10 tanks last time. I want 30 tanks this time or whatever it is. Then the real question is, assuming he doesn't become president in 2020, which is conceivable he might.
It's going to be, well, yeah, the question is, it's going to be like God Bless America at Yankee Stadium. Right, like the patriotism ratchet only goes in one direction.
That's right, right? Like how? Like I mean, President Biden Harris, Warren, Sanders, Buttigieg, Slalwell, or whatever, whoever it is.
Williamson.
If they, Williamson, if they try not to have tanks.
Right, it'll be.
How much will the Republicans be like, he's un-American? Right. Or she's un-American. Like, where was his, where were their lapel pins? And yeah. That, I mean, right? That's what's going to happen.
It'll be, yeah, it'll have become a tradition. And it'll be disrespectful to the armed forces to cancel the tank parade.
Right, of course. beyond that, I don't know what else we do about it. It's just...
I thought it was, you know, others have commented on this, but I thought it was very funny that they were worried one of the bridges across, I guess, one of the bridges into the D.C. was, like, not stable or not, couldn't support the weight of tanks. Which seems, someone said that was like a good thing for your capital city, but also maybe we're making our tanks too heavy. Like, how are we going to get our tanks into other cities? If
like,
can't?
Yeah, the point being, like, where are these tanks? Well, that's my other question. Like, he's been talking this week about how that we got new tanks and this and that. I'm like, what is the conflict that we're anticipating where we're going to be using a lot of tanks again?
I'm not sure.
I mean, I guess it's just deserts. That's all we're thinking about. We're not going into cities. We're just going into deserts or something. Or we're just outside of town. We don't need to cross bridges. I don't know. But be that as it may. So that's tomorrow. Or yesterday.
That was yesterday.
Depending on what your perspective is.
The tanks were yesterday.
Let's go back a week. As of Wednesday, there was a bunch of polls out. They seem to be all over the place.
Yeah.
The one consistent element of them. Like Bernie seems to be up and down in them. There's two consistent dynamics that seem to me. One is that Biden went down. And the other is that Harris went up. And Warren sort of maybe also edged up a little bit too. But those, in terms of you look at the trends consistently across all of the, that's what happened.
Yeah.
What is your, I know it's funny. Like I used to swear off the horse race stuff, but I feel like it's quite clear where everybody is. It seems to me there's a clarity. Maybe I've just been doing this for too long or what, or I think it's too early in some ways for people to really absorb stuff. I think there was a poll out there that showed the other day that Democratic voters are only paying 35% of them are paying attention to the primary, which is probably consistent with the number of people who are going to vote in primaries in terms of Democrats. But so maybe we have the full complement of people who are going to pay attention have paid attention now.
I also, I think there's a thing, and you see this, I imagine, with Sanders' numbers. Because I remember a poll that was like, people who aren't paying very close attention, Sanders is doing a lot better with them. And like, that's a function of they made up their mind. So I think there are people who are not paying attention because they're like, I know who I'm voting for.
Right.
So you don't really need to keep up with it if you've made up your mind. But I do, I feel like the horse race stuff, it's a lot, you're on safer ground trying to sort of analyze the current moment than you are trying to predict the future.
Right.
But immediately after the two debates, it should have been pretty easy to see that like Harris was going to rise, Biden was probably going to fall, and that Biden's fall was going to sort of benefit these candidates who are pitching themselves very much in the liberal mainstream, but like not, but you know, the younger, fresher alternative, basically.
Right. Right. And I think to a certain extent from at least from my sort of ideological perspective, anything that brings Biden down at this point is good. And there's virtually nothing else that can happen that is a negative in my mind at this stage of the campaign. I think a tight grouping is probably good for the candidates that I support, which is obviously it's Bernie Sanders and to a certain extent, I would like to see Elizabeth Warren come out of it. I mean, really, I'd be most happy if it's anybody but Biden, anybody with a B in front of their name, I think actually,
I don't like,
Like a Biden, Buttigieg, Beto. The only one would be, happy with a B is a Bernie, I think. And then it's just really, I guess we got to wait, right? I mean, in some ways it's too early.
Yeah.
Beyond the notion of like, this is not going to be a situation where somebody walks away from it.
Right. And I, this was the first two debates, probably when a lot of Democrats only just started paying attention at, you know, last week. It's always been ridiculous to imagine that Biden's lead was going to be stable because people hadn't even been introduced to the other ones, you know, unless they are avid Majority Report listeners or New Republic readers or people who have MSNBC on all day. Like, normal people are waiting to make up their mind until, like, signals like, okay, the debate is on tonight. Let's see what these people are about.
Right. And my argument has been that people don't really know Joe Biden.
Yeah.
They think they know Joe Biden.
Yep.
Because they know Joe Biden, the vice president.
Yeah.
But they don't know Joe Biden, the candidate. Nope. And the Joe Biden, the candidate, has been significantly less popular over time than Joe Biden, the vice president.
Yeah.
And Hillary Clinton had this problem, too. She was extremely popular as Secretary of Defense. When she got into the candidacy, it's people see, for better or for worse, a different side of you. And Joe Biden's not attractive.
No,
it seems to me.
I mean, this in 2008, you know, with which was a generation ago, practically, in terms of electoral politics, he was he had no interest from the voters in 2008.
None.
And you know, the guy, like, was a popular vice president for two terms after that, but we're seeing candidate Joe again, just like
you
said.
Right, exactly. All right, so let's move on from the debate to a certain extent, and then the race, because I just don't know that there's really any other developments.
Well, Hickenlooper's melting down. I enjoyed that.
That is absolutely right. When your campaign finance director leaves your candidacy to go work for Beto at this point, you know you've got a problem, right? I mean, that's like, Michael will step in. I mean, when you go from working for, when it's a step up to go work for the guy who had the greatest drop in attractiveness to the candidacy after this debate, because I think Beto topped even Biden's drop.
Yeah.
You know you've got a problem,
yeah.
Right? Like, I mean, Hickenlooper's got to be thinking like, oi, I'm not even,
right?
I'm not, I don't, how do I even get into, never mind the cabinet, like,
yeah.
I don't even think I could get, like, at an agency now.
No.
Isn't part of Hickenlooper's, like, bad karma is that literally the same person is running from Colorado.
Right, that we've got, we already had.
Bennett's, like, a much more pleasant human being than him.
Right. Yeah.
So it's like, hey, we have two people who make no history, have no interesting ideas, have boring, depressing records, and they're right-wing Democrats. And one of them seems like a nice enough guy to run into on an airport line.
Right.
And Hickenlooper, he actually kind of seems like a jerk.
Don't they want Hickenlooper to run again for something in Colorado? Can he run for governor, though?
Well, no, they wanted Bennett to run for re-election for Senate. I don't know. Oh, yeah, no, there was a Senate seat they wanted Hickenlooper.
Oh, they wanted it right, against Cory Gardner. Right. Yeah. I mean, that may still happen, it seems.
Yeah.
But you got to wonder if you're the campaign finance director and that's floating around, you would go to Hickenlooper and say, like, so what do you say? We're going to go in this other race? And Hickenlooper's like, no, I am determined to be president. And the campaign finance director says, well,
all right,
I can't believe this. I guess. It looks like Beto is my life raft.
I'll go work for the other guy who should be running for Senate
right,
instead.
Exactly.
You're not the only delusional narcissist in this race, John.
There's a lot of them, John. All right, so let's leave that for a moment. I mean, I think, you know, we've certainly said on the program all we can say in terms of where this race, to the extent that we can sort of anticipate where this race is going. One place it did not go during the debate, however, was impeachment of Donald Trump. I don't know if that even came up, which is suspicious to me, to be honest with you. Like, I'm not I just find it very odd that none of those people, of those journalists, were like, hey.
Yeah.
Impeachment might be an interesting sort of like clickbaity thing to talk about. And I can't help but get the sense that there was a feeling of, well, I don't know what could inspire all of those journalists to think like, impeachment, nobody's interested in that.
Yeah.
Nobody who watches MSNBC is interested in that. And we don't want to put, I mean, that to me seems to be like.
No one who's deeply invested in picking a person to replace Donald Trump could possibly be interested in removing Donald Trump from office.
I mean, isn't that weird? I mean, I feel like we could do an episode on sort of like conjecture on why that question wasn't asked.
You're saying Nancy Pelosi doesn't want him to lose re-election?
why that question wasn't asked. But it is weird that it wasn't brought up.
I think it might be. I do. I think it's weird it wasn't asked because I can see lots of, you know, even just from a making the candidate squirm sense, why you would want to ask it. I almost just wonder if it's just considered, if they're almost too savvy to think impeachment is on the table, right? Because like the savvy people are like, Pelosi's not going to do it. So
I have a Cedar style conspiracy about maybe why not.
What is
Which
this?
I feel
style
like,
conspiracy?
Well, it's just the Cedar style thinking would be this is not a bad thing. It's fine.
Don't need to be convinced that Cedar style thinking is not a bad thing.
I hope not. No, I don't think any. Okay, Chuck Dodd's not going to ask about impeachment. The most likely person to ask about impeachment would be Rachel Maddow. And I feel of that lineup. And she steered clear. Of her whole core brand's proposition. She didn't say anything about Russia. She didn't say anything about her questions are very standard issue. And I'm wondering if she's trying to sort of reposition herself as an anchor. You know, there was a story a couple of weeks ago, the New York Times was telling journalists that they couldn't go on her show anymore because I forget what the phrasing was, but well, I know that's a very big concern there.
New York Times so reporters are the,
not
New
supposed
York
to
Times,
on opinion shows.
Yes.
But there was a sense for a while.
The majority reporting.
Right. No, of course. But there was a sense maybe that her show was. Yeah, but that was a problem in MSNBC. Phil Griffin, I know, according to this report, was making calls. They don't like that brand association. So at least for me with Rachel, especially coming in and expecting her to at least ask one question about what she spent a vast majority of her time on the last couple of years, it was striking.
I think it's very possible that it was just sort of a less of an ideological idea and more of just like a branding thing because we need this to be more NBC News than MSNBC type of thing. That's conceivable. They're also, I mean, you know, this may be a different topic, but prior to Trump, I know that MSNBC was attempting to become CNN of days of yore, and I imagine if they're starting to anticipate where things are going, if it's a Democratic presidency.
Yeah.
Now, it could be funny to watch them do the sort of same thing that they did last time, which is like gear up. To completely wholesale get rid of everybody in their primetime lineup.
And then
Trump wins again and see what happens. But
yeah, that would be fun to watch.
Yeah, that would be fun to watch, really, I guess, for funny. A minute or two. If I was very, very... It's sort of like one of those things, like if I could just look through a pinprick hole on the on the horizon instead of like the horizon. Like it's like, I guess in some ways, like if you're looking at a nuclear explosion and you just see like, oh, look at the lights. And then you don't see the mushroom cloud.
You don't go into the little town afterwards.
Right, exactly. but so impeachment was not brought up. And to a large extent, my sense is Joe Kennedy the other day came out for impeachment. We finally had Neil, who is the chairman of the Ways and Means Committee, start the court case about Trump's taxes.
Took a long time.
My sense is that this has been the strategy. Yeah. We're going to slow bleed this thing.
Yep.
And by the time there's enough people to say we want impeachment, Nancy Pelosi is going to say, in February?
Yeah.
You know, like...
It's in the election's a few months away. Like,
right.
I think it's really clearly the leadership strategy, I think.
It feels like they've been successful.
Yeah, I think it's working. I think it's working so far. I mean, it might have already worked.
I think this is a problem.
Yes.
I mean, I think it's a problem for democracy. I think it's a political problem. I think it's a problem in every possible imaginable way.
Yeah.
I mean, and I say this as someone who 6 months ago, I was for impeaching him, but I thought the best argument not impeaching him was like, you impeach him, the Senate refuses the Senate to convict. Yeah. And then what happens if he wins re-election?
Well, right, yeah.
Like, there's no, there's absolutely no restrictions whatsoever. I mean, people have been saying this, to, I spoke to a lot of people this week about the gerrymandering case. And the biggest danger about the gerrymandering case now is, to the extent that the idea that the Supreme Court could reverse stuff and the Republicans didn't want to go too far.
Yeah. That's just like,
that's over.
That's off the table now. Yeah.
Now it's like you, it's incumbent upon you to go as far as possible with the gerrymandering. And that's a little bit terrifying.
Yeah.
But it could be that way if they impeach. But so what are the implications of that? I mean, the idea that now Donald Trump is just like impervious, it seems.
Well, that is what is absurd about it is, you like by creating, it's like a fear of a completely unencumbered Trump has led them to remove the cumbers.
Right.
Right. They were like, if we impeach and then the Senate doesn't convict, then he'll do anything he wants. So we should let him do anything he wants. It's absurd logic. I don't know. The implications are that it's, I mean, it's the look forward, not back, like Bush Obama first term thing again too, except we were doing it in advance. That's the bizarre thing, where it's like we're not gonna hold hearings on the prior administration's like malfeasance because that would be looking backwards, but we're also not gonna do anything about the current administration's malfeasance.
I sort of feel like it's almost like even less like Obama could say like don't look back.
Yeah.
And one could argue like, okay, yeah, he's just, that's just obviously that's pablum. But he's afraid that the, well, I don't know what he was afraid of, but I could say like, okay,
the
you don't want to hold
impeachment.
The
national security state.
The national security state, or maybe. Hey, the American public won't help, or where's the political angle in this?
Yeah.
But I can easily come up with a political reason to impeach Donald Trump, even if he's not going to get impeached in the convicted in the Senate, because then you can implicate the Republicans.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And the hearings themselves are not like I feel like a lot of Democrats have convinced themselves that Trump is like more powerful when he's under attack, when in fact he becomes like a huge screaming baby when he's under attack. And what he loves is to not be under attack. And this is what they have.
What I love is to not be under attack.
Like, they've convinced themselves that impeachment hearings will only make him more powerful. But my God, he'd be screaming and throwing a tantrum every day if they were actually holding hearings about this stuff.
Well, the other thing is that you would be putting the Republicans on the defensive. I mean, there's some notion that Nancy Pelosi must have that, like, the Republicans are just going to be like, oh, thank God we don't have to deal with impeachment and let's just ride this out. As opposed to, like, we're going to get Bill Barr to start, you know, indictments of every sitting Democratic lawmaker and Robert Mueller and everybody. Like, they're not going to not do anything.
Yeah.
And particularly if there's like nothing preoccupying them.
Yes.
Like, if like I'm serious. Like if the White House, if everybody in the White House is not having to run around talking to their lawyer about their testimony that may come up, or if they're not sitting there trying to fight subpoenas, or if they're not, you know, if the lawmakers in the Senate are not starting to, you know, spend time like, how am I going to vote? What's the best way for me to position how I'm going to vote? If they're not doing that, they're going to do something.
They're going to do other stuff.
They're going to do things, and they're just going to go on offense.
Yeah. I think that that's what's really problematic. Like, it's one thing for people like me to be sort of skeptical of people like Pelosi and people focusing on norms and this type of thing. But it's very hard when they start falling short of their own metrics. You know, I mean, impeachment is a very big thing, but I think this stuff with the border funding is also so reflective of it. And it's obviously people who are first and foremost horrified that in fact we have concentration camps, and apologies to Meghan McCain, but just more broadly that again, I mean, I don't understand. They, yes, they campaigned on healthcare, but they absolutely said, this is out of control. This is ridiculous. You need a check on him.
Yeah.
And they're not doing that in such to the point also where then conversely, when she says stuff like he should be in jail, it's like doubly offensive because it's like, well, first of all,
you're the cop.
There you go. Yeah.
You're the only cop.
And by the way, and secondly, I would say if there was only one thing that I would remotely take seriously about norms would be like maybe we shouldn't all copy Donald Trump and just saying like they should go to jail.
Right.
But if you really think that, then at the very least, you got to remove them.
Right. Or try.
I mean, or try. Yeah.
Or just say.
It's so it's double. You're reinforcing the authoritarian ethos and doing nothing.
Yes. Just stand up and say, this is our formalized way of saying what you're doing is wrong. You cannot listen to us and you can break. But force them to break the rules.
Yeah.
Force them to, you know, because otherwise you're just giving. You're giving a tacit approval for all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, strategically speaking,
they got Justin Amash to come out for them anyways, right? They've got the classic Republican
cover. Because Amash went too far for them. They don't want, like they weren't waiting for a Republican to give them cover. They weren't expecting any of them to.
Right.
If they were waiting for a Republican to give them cover, they would have seized on it.
But of course not.
They were like, shut up, Justin.
Right.
Like,
well, but here's the thing that I can't figure out.
He's a nerd. It doesn't matter.
You know, we've had you on in the past, and we've talked about Chuck Schumer today on the program. Like I say, it's Wednesday. It actually, like, if someone had come up to me and say, did Chuck Schumer retire?
You'd have to
Is he still
it.
A senator?
Yeah.
Is he still the majority leader?
You know what Chuck Schumer would say?
I don't know.
Pick up your phone.
If
one last fake Caribbean cruise call.
If
you're welcome.
Honestly,
leadership.
If somebody told me that Chuck Schumer, no, he's been in the hospital for 3 weeks. he's had a kidney removed or something, like, you know, because sometimes that happens with senators. You're like,
there's
I didn't
off
realize.
Chance yeah.
Like, you know, like, oh, he's been, they had, he's recovering like, from cancer.
It turns out he's had dementia for 4 years and we've been hiding it.
Right. Something like this. I mean, if someone said to me that Chuck Schumer.
I love how these are the most flattering scenarios. All right, I guess if you had dementia, you could do this.
Chuck Schumer. No, he's been recovering from, you know, knee surgery and he's been laid
because
up.
There wasn't
in Washington.
I had a knee injury because there wasn't enough room on the plane. And that's what we're working on.
If someone told me that, I would be like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I get it. That's why I haven't heard hide nor hair of him. Like, he has disappeared.
Yeah.
And the only person who gets less attention, you know, apparently is Mitch McConnell. But Mitch McConnell determines when he's going to come out and actually do stuff. I mean, there is such a vacuum of leadership. I don't have a sense of, like, what do they think is going to happen?
Yeah.
Like, what? Like, and it's interesting. You also don't see yet. I mean, Joe Biden was trying to do this, I guess, maybe on some level. But you don't see any of the, and maybe it's too early in the primary. But you don't get the sense that any of these, the presidential candidates are trying to assume some sense of leadership
I don't know.
Of the party either, because everything seems so incoherent.
It's actually worrying. One thing that worries me is that there's no, you know, we hear about dissension in the House all the time, people who are mad about Pelosi from the left or from the right. Like, it is alarming to me that we don't hear that about Schumer from senators. Like, we don't hear it, you know, we don't hear that, like, we don't hear Bernie's pissed off at Schumer. We don't hear Warren's pissed off at Schumer. Like, we just
Merkley,
don't.
Who's supposedly trying to set himself to be the successor.
Yeah. And
as a progressive. Yeah.
We just don't, like, we hear the people we hear it from are former aides to Harry Reid.
Right.
That's who we hear it from. Former Harry Reid aides are like, what the hell is he doing? And I'm actually very concerned that there isn't urgency among what few left leaning progressives there are in the Senate.
Yeah. What do you think that is? Do you think they have other agendas, or they just think that, like, there's no value in going after Schumer right now because what are we going to do?
I mean, I guess they think that there's no – they might not have a better option in mind. It might just be, like, hopelessness about the McConnell thing. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to say. Because I do wonder, especially after the border funding thing.
Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah.
That was a total – I mean,
that was a disaster.
It's such a disaster because, again, I'm not saying I don't agree with it, but if someone said to me, look,
Here's the deal. The Speaker wants to do an agenda, and she wants to fight Donald Trump legislatively.
Yeah.
And this is what we're going to do. And this and that. And impeachment's going to be a distraction.
From our.
And people are going to make it look like. So we're going to get in there. We're going to roll up our sleeves, and we're going to do this, and we're going to take it to him with a baseball bat instead of going over there with a, you know, like a gun.
Yeah.
And we're just going to pound him. And but no. Yeah. They did nothing.
Yeah.
They're not making a stand on the story that has dominated the headlines. Like, I'm sorry. The American public, it seems to me, at least a significant portion of it, could get behind a party that was saying, we don't want to represent dead people floating, you know, a dead child with her father floating in the Rio Grande. Like, I mean,
completely insane thing to me is the extremist moderate position that it will have been worse politically to be tarred as withholding funds from ICE than it would be to be like, I mean, that was
determining
was
some level of justice.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
Okay, you're going to get your funding, but guess
but
what?
Guess what?
Members of Congress can go in with our cameras whenever we want. We don't have to make an appointment for this or whatever it is. Like, they got, I don't know what they got. Maybe they got something, but they have not communicated it to people who follow politics single day.
They got a verbal promise from Mike Pence.
Oh yes, that will tell you if someone dies within 24 hours.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
But I think that's the other, like, Andrew Sullivan, of course, is the worst. And Alex, now you bear some responsibility for him just because of where you were. But he wrote like you'll see
Wait,
bunch
where
of
where is Andrew?
He's at New York Magazine.
He's not hanging out with Chuck Schumer somewhere in the witness protection. No,
he should be. He wrote, but you know, you'll see a ton of pieces like this of like, hey, I really want to vote for Democrats, but X. And he did, you know, most of them would be about like Medicare for All, but he did one on immigration recently where he was basically like, I think it was what the Democrats need to learn from Bannon. And what is so frustrating is just, and I say this all the time, we can have these broader debates about the border and open borders and all of this stuff, but it seems that almost nobody understands that it seems to me a totally sellable case to just be really clear, to spell out what we're saying, which is like, you're still going to check passports. You're still going to have a process. We're just not going to kidnap and kill children anymore.
Yeah.
And I have to think that is a pretty broad swath message outside of the Republican base. And guys like Josh Gottheimer, just to put one name on it, I think he's New Jersey 5th or 6th.
Yeah.
He's the leader of the Problem Solvers Caucus.
I mean, he's just a scumbag.
I mean, please, I was going to lead up to it. Talk about all the ways. I mean, talk about him, because he's a guy. This is who's driving. This is who Pelosi's listening to him more than Pocan or Jaipal.
Right.
Well, because he's got leverage, and the leverage he has is he's got the luxury of complete nihilism about whatever the end result of his machinations are. It's the centrist thing where, because he doesn't actually care about any result except for in very narrow political terms, he can, you know, his actual, like, what he wants to accomplish is kneecapping the left. And he's got the leverage of saying has to be a moderate because he's from a swing district in New Jersey. He's just he's a product of the awful New Jersey machine.
And Marston Burstyler. Mark Penn's old global PR firm.
Yeah.
And he met with Rashida Tlaib when she first got into Congress. He basically was like, all right, we should sit down. And of course, that's what you do. And he basically turned the session into like a, you don't understand how things work here. And, you know, essentially tried to bully her out of her politics.
Yeah. And he's verbally abusive to his staff and all that other. But anyway, he's the leader of the Problem Solvers. And it's unclear what problem they have yet solved.
Right.
They've been working on it for a while, and they're working on their first problem.
Right.
But
the kids dying in custody.
That was not a big enough problem for them to solve. No. Mm-hmm.
Well, the interesting thing is, I mean, this was a dynamic that existed in the Senate that you see more clearly in the Senate, right?
Yeah.
Because the numbers are smaller, and there was always talk about sort of like a filibuster reform and taking it down to 55 and taking it to 60. And I just remember a lot of the discussion at that time was it's just a question of
who then is going to put themselves in that position of being the 55th vote?
Yeah.
And that's the person, and everybody, there's a there's always a group of people trying to be that person.
And they define, they don't have any political program except for being that deciding.
Except
vote.
For being the person that everybody's going to come to and yeah. say, like, you know, and amassing power. I mean, yeah. it's hard to contemplate this, I think, for normal people.
Well,
I think it's just really hard to wrap your head around, like, you're going to make decisions based upon, like, that are going to implicate the lives of sometimes hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of people, just based upon, like, you know, like,
your narcissism.
Yeah. It's like really, I mean, as a congressman from New Jersey, like, what's the variance in terms of how much power you can have yeah. other than in that moment? Like, it's not like you're going to walk into, you know, hotels and be like, here's a free room or here's like free food. Like, how does this manifest like, itself?
You
like,
kept the kids in those concentration camps. Here's a free room.
Right, Mr. Gottmeier. Hey, here's a Buick. Like, I don't understand.
He gets free dances at the Bada Bing because he kept open ice.
It's because, I don't know, it's just people who, I mean, it is just about relationships and power, and politics is just transactional. Like, for them, it is. It's about transactions and not actually about, like, they I feel like these people barely believe that they're, like, things happen as a result of the votes they take, right? Like, I think that's the part they haven't actually, like, reached cognizance of that. Like,
which, and you'd expect that people involved in politics would have a better sense of that,
yeah.
right? But okay, so what does this mean for because Pelosi?
Well, this is what I was saying about Schumer, is that Pelosi, we always talk about the people who are criticizing her, and Pelosi obviously for the border funding thing took a lot of shit for that, but Schumer let yes. everyone vote for it.
Yes.
Schumer let everyone vote for it.
That's right. So it was something like 83-17 yeah. or something. He released all of these Democratic senators, did not hold them. And once they vote, once you get 25 Democratic yes. senators to vote for something, there's no Democrat in the House who's going to say, like, I'm not sticking my neck out yeah. for this, because I don't even have the cover of my own party in the Senate. Schumer just, and you know, like, I don't know when we find this out, like, who writes this, you know, and you know, like, we have a vague notion of, like, Harry Reid, you know, now yeah. who has cancer, I guess. And, you know, Ryan Grimm did a lot of reporting on this. And even then, like, Reid backs off some of that stuff because whatever, this is just, I don't understand.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't understand. It's Senate brain. I don't understand it.
But the question is,
Jesus,
if, you know, I don't know, sir, if we're ever going to find out. If Nancy Pelosi goes, Chuck Schumer fucked me over.
Yeah.
Over and over again. Or if she says, Chuck Schumer's an idiot and he didn't even know, like, I would say he fucked me over, but he couldn't even tie his shoes.
Yeah.
Or if Chuck Schumer was like, Nancy told me.
Yeah.
I just did what she said.
This is my impression too. A lot of the subtext of what Pelosi's been saying, and I think still incorrect about the politics, but my impression of the subtext of what she's saying about impeachment is that she can't trust Schumer to get the Democrats. Like, even not just that the Senate would vote to keep Trump, but that a significant number of Senate Democrats would also not vote to remove Trump. And that is
that would be damaging.
That is my impression of when Pelosi warns about the Senate.
That would be
that
damaging.
She cannot trust Schumer to.
She's not talking about the Republicans. No. She's talking about Schumer's inability.
We'll talk about impeachment later. First, coupons. How long are they valid for? This is the type of question we need to ask ourselves if we want to stay in touch with the electorate. Joe Manchin's making a dreidel joke again. Okay, Joe.
This is one of the most depressing Friday shows I've ever possibly imagined. I mean, it had not occurred to me that her real fear is, and that is a very valid fear. You don't want, the last thing you want
is for
if you're gonna lean on those purple district Democrats in the House yeah. to vote for impeachment. Right, because you need them. Because if you don't have them, you look like an it's even more of a disaster. I mean, I agree, that's a disaster. But then if they vote for it, and their senators mm-hmm. vote against it,
mm-hmm. That's
all the leverage that the Republicans in the Senate and the House need, challengers need.
Yep. To say, look at the loony left out of touch. Like, even their own senators didn't vote for it. But yeah.
Oh, that's brutal.
Occurred to me, but I think
the
that
only
is a very
way I would ever
assessment.
Defend Nancy yeah. Pelosi.
I think that's
would
very
be
astute.
At the expense of having lower expectations of Chuck Schumer.
So. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I was going to say, because, you know, in her loss in that that deal is uncharacteristic.
Yep, it's very uncharacteristic. Yeah,
she has been. She never, you know, this happened many times with Drunky Drunkerson. I can't remember his name now. Bonaire.
Oh, Boner, yeah.
He brought up many votes
that
lost.
Yeah.
Ryan brought up votes that lost.
Mm-hmm.
She never does.
She doesn't do it. If she doesn't have the votes, she doesn't bring
it up. She doesn't bring it up. And
well, this is what I was saying.
The idea that she's constantly getting sold out by Chuck Schumer is problematic. But you would imagine there would be some conduit, like, but I guess there's just a feeling like, what are we going to do?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Schumer hiding from her at various DC establishments.
I mean, the way, Nancy. You know, I think I was talking to someone about, oh boy, which bad deal was it? I was talking to someone about the, what was the deal they were just doing where they pulled, oh yeah, the prescription drug deal. And this was a few weeks ago. And you know they were like, yeah, we have the caucus between the House and the Senate, but like outside of that, there's just not a lot of communication, which I find insane. That like the House Dems and Senate Dems are just like they're not coordinating. Like Chuck and Nancy might be doing some degree of it, but there's not like coordination happening beyond that, which I
it's stunning.
But
isn't
that also part of the problem? Just, you know, functionally, we talk about how the Democratic Party is really not a party.
You were right. It's not.
And I mean, it. You know, it's like there's a lot of interesting historical and comparative politics reasons for that. And it matters ideologically and so on. But this might be really the rubber meeting the road in an incredibly practical way. Like you have one party that basically fuses oligarchs and white identity politics and they just drive stuff through. And then this other thing is split.
Yeah.
Geographically, money-wise, strategically. I mean, if what you're saying is true, then that would mean that even two of the people who are relatively speaking the closest, which would be Pelosi's better than Schumer, but I mean,
yeah,
but they're same generation,
yeah.
California, New York. I mean, if they can't even coordinate, that's pretty bad.
Right. I mean, it also may explain, too, why there is such sort of like party dependence on the presidency. And maybe it's vice versa, that the Democrats always seem to focus on the presidency in some fashion, maybe because for many years institutionally we took for granted the House and the Senate. I don't know.
Yeah.
It is. It's bleak. I mean, is there a saying that says like, you know, the darkest hour,
it's always darkest before the dawn.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It's also always darkest before it's even darker.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Like it's darkest.
That's the darkest it can be until it gets darker.
Until it gets darker.
Well, that's a tough point. And it's true. It's an interesting point.
I worry about what happens in the fall in terms of like Democrats getting caught up in now maybe the primary dominates the news enough so that it takes the oxygen out of anything that the Republicans could be doing. They'll have their conspiracy theories. There'll be all sorts of I don't know. Maybe now that they don't have the House, they can't have sort of hearings on shadow banning and that's happening through the former DOJ, you know, Obama DOJ people who are working on the shadow banning and through a pizza place or whatever it is. But
Mr. No, do you think Eric Holder was behind the attack on you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't know. It's it just gets more bizarre, and I wonder, you know.
I mean, I don't know. I do, like, just talking about insane Republican hearings just makes me wonder even more, like where where are they? Like, where are the televised hearings? Like, you don't even have to have impeachment for to have some of those. I know that
we have Mueller in 2 weeks,
up, but they issue subpoenas, they get ignored, and then they agree to close door meetings with people for no reason. Like, do you not want publicity for oversight?
When they don't have closed door meetings,
I don't know what they want. That's the thing is that I can. That's the thing that I keep like sort of banging my head up against.
Exactly.
I can understand you would rather A than B or B than A, but I don't see you wanting either.
They
want
to have the House, get reelected, take care of their donors, and be relatively popular.
I mean, it's
so obvious what they want.
But there doesn't seem to be any...
As individuals, it's not a cohesive project.
Well, I understand, but I don't even see what individuals are doing per se. Like, this
well,
is,
I mean, a guy like Gottheimer can, you know, deliver for particular interests.
But the leadership has a strategy, theoretically.
Theoretically.
And it seems to be four corners. We're just going to wait and hope that nothing happens for the next 16 months.
Like, please don't let anything happen. We can't let it. Yeah.
Well, isn't this a generations of people who basically that is how they've either won national elections with a charismatic presidential candidate or they win like in 2006 where it's like a war is spiraling out of control.
Well, that was
a pedophile
just
in the house. Okay, guys.
Yeah. Actually, maybe the 2006 lesson is the actual, like, that is what they're actually just trying to recreate. It's like, sit back, do nothing, and eventually things will get so bad that we'll come back in a huge wave.
Yes, let's hope that there is a scandal where the top congressional leaders are implicated in covering up for the predation of pages.
Yeah.
I mean,
Would that even play the same way?
I don't even know anymore. It's really hard to say.
You know, you're being really unfair about people's preferences.
Yes.
I thought you were the party of tolerance.
Yeah, how come you're not tolerant anymore?
Anyways, the Democrats. He'll start talking about Comet Pizza in his reelection campaign.
We are, 10 days away or so from the Mueller hearings. Maybe this all changes, the tenor changes of this. I don't know. I don't see why it would.
Yeah.
There's no reason to believe that I don't know. It'll be interesting to see if Gerald Nadler is like getting with people and saying like, we're going to do this actually the right way.
Yeah.
Like you're going to be responsible for asking about this. Mm-hmm. You're going to be responsible for asking about that. And we're going to try and do this cohesively in some fashion. I guess we'll see.
We'll see.
Aside from that, I don't know. I guess the only other excitement is Netroots Nation.
Jesus. Wow.
Yeah. Well,
I'm going to do another meditation retreat sooner than I thought.
Right. There you go. I will be down at Netroots next week. Are you not going to?
No, I'm not going.
No. All right. Well, Alex, anything? Did we leave anything on the table?
No, I don't think so. Make sure to subscribe to the New Republic magazine.
Yeah, folks, now's the time. Well, you know, I have to say, like, today is Wednesday, and we had Matt Ford on. Talking about the Supreme Court, and there's a lot of, I think, like, young energy, leftist energy over there.
Yeah,
is that fair to say?
I think that's fair to say. There's like, Chris Layman is a new-ish editor. He came over from The Baffler. And I think we're doing fun stuff, and there's more fun stuff to come.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, folks need to do that. I mean, I feel like to a certain extent there has been a sort of a generational shift at these places.
Mm-hmm.
The American Prospect is, Dayan's over there now. And I think this is good. It's a good time to support these publications. So, folks, go over there, give Alex Perrine a bunch of clicks,
as it were,
and then also subscribe. Get the paper version.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually still a physical magazine, and it looks great. Like it's
that's cool.
Yeah. Cool. So yeah, I had a cover story like my first one. And I was like, I'm on the cover of a magazine. It was awesome.
What do you do with that now? You'll frame it, right?
Right now it's like. In
a stack of papers.
Stack. Right.
You really want a picture of Mitch McConnell?
I know. Like, that's the problem. It's like a framed illustration of Mitch McConnell.
How old's your kid?
Oh, he's 2.5.
Yeah. So it's just like you've got like his scribbling or it's like paint that he's just rubbed on with his hand.
Yeah.
And 30 of those in the stack.
and then, yes, yeah. Right. a copy of the magazine.
Been there. All right. Alex Breen, thanks so much for your time today. Really appreciate it. Folks, just a reminder, you can support this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com and justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. We will be back live on Monday. And a reminder, we are going to be rolling out in the next couple of days, next week, a new AM brief, if you will. It will be in the Majority Report feed. It's going to be short. It's not going to give you a lot of depth, frankly, but it will give you a sense of what stories are in play on any given day. And we'll have a little bit of attitude, but we're not going to editorialize that much. We don't have time to do it. We're just going to do it quick. It's going to be a quickie, if you will. All right. In the meantime, we will see you Monday live. Thank you, and hope you had a good 4th, and bye. To get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know.